Okay, welcome back. It's been a while. We take a little time off and busy running. You've been busy running golf tournaments. July 1st, and that means we are going to look back on the month of June and talk specifically about match play. By the way, for those who are just finding us, thank you for tuning in to Spirit of the Game, a deeper dive on rules of golf. This is Ed Mate.
And Lewis Harry.
And let's talk about match play. So I had the fun opportunity to see the finals of the men's and women's match play at the Broadmoor and to be out there most of the week for the junior state amateur in its new format following the USGA format of 36 holes of stroke play qualifying. We're going into single elimination matches. And I stood on the first tee for the start of the match, the first day of matches, and just reminded all the juniors the differences between stroke play and match play. And obviously you don't have time to get into all the differences. So the three things I really pointed out to them was, that the scoring is reconciled by hole, not by total score. I said, if Lewis makes a 10 and I make a 11, Lewis wins the hole. So they, I think understood that. I also emphasized that strokes can be conceded, holes can be conceded, and the entire match can be conceded. And when concessions are made, they cannot be declined, withdrawn. So we talked about that. You always get the question in match play. So if I can see the 3-footer to you and you go ahead and putt it, and you miss it, does that mean you missed it? And the answer is no. And then the main thing I emphasized was order of play, because in match play, order of play is imperative because your entire strategy is predicated on what the other player is doing. Whereas in stroke play, that's not the case. You're playing against the entire field. So really, match play is the oldest form of play. It's how the game started. But those are the main three things I emphasize. What do you think of when you think of the most important differences between the two?
So being a rules podcast and being a rules nerd, the first thing I think about is the difference in the general penalty. So obviously in stroke play, the general penalty is 2 strokes, but in match play, it's a loss of hole penalty. Sometimes in stroke play, when you get the general penalty, those 2 strokes might ultimately not matter in your final score of the hole. It certainly can shoot a good round, racking up a few general penalties in there. You can overcome 2 strokes relatively easily with a handful of birdies, but sometimes in match play, a loss of hole can be absolutely devastating to the status of the match. I think in match play, a player breaching a rule that results in the general penalty could have a pretty large effect on what happens in that particular match. The other thing I think about in match play, and you already touched on it, is essentially the order of play. In match play, honor on the tee and who is first to play in the progression of the hole is essential to the match and how the match flows. Having the ability to recall an opponent's shot in match play is a sometimes a key piece in the strategy of how a certain player plays a hole, if that occurs. And also having the ability to recall a shot when a player plays from outside the teeing area. Having that recall ability for a player versus an opponent in match play is a large difference that a lot of people kind of overlook.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned that because it just came back to me. We had our men's match play end. The last hole of the 36-hole final, grueling week of matches and qualifying, ended on a recall, or the hole ended on the hole that ended the match. There was a recall. So Connor Jones, who went on to win the tournament, he was 3 up with 3 to play. Used to be known as being dormy. Sadly, we've lost the term dormy from the rules. Is that right?
It's not technically a term of the rules, but of all the ones that have gone away, that's the one I still enjoy and I still use. Brent and I actually played a match this week, which was really fun. I ended up winning that match.
So of course it was.
I like to sneak that in. I won 3-2, but, Brent and I were talking on one of the tees and I mentioned that, yeah, this match status, I was dormant.
Yeah. 3 up with 3 to play.
3 up, 3
you
to
are
play.
Exactly like Connor Jones against Dylan Stewart. So they come across the tunnel, Broadmoor East. Dylan Stewart had won not the previous hole, but the hole prior or one of the holes prior, and he had the honor. It was his turn to play. Connor, who had pretty much had the team most of the day, having watched most of the final, if not all of it, and he kind of came across the tunnel. They're walking and, you know, kind of fell asleep and teed up his ball on 16, par 3, hit it to 2 feet. You're 3 up with 3 to play. That's game, set, match. It's over. You know, unless Dylan holes it, that's it. Well, lo and behold, it wasn't Connor's turn. So Dylan exercised his recall right and said, that was a good shot. However, let's see you do it again. So it's interesting you bring that up. And as it turns out, he hit the next one in the greenside bunker. At that time, I think we were both in scoring, or were you with me, or did you see the end?
No, I think that at that point we headed into scoring. I think this was at the point to where our match referee was, off taking care of something else, here at this time, but,
nature called, let's say.
Yeah, we were in scoring, I believe, getting the trophy presentation ready to go at this point.
So that brings up so anyway, just to finish the story so people aren't, if you read about it online, you already know the answer, but it ended up that Connor made a great up and down out of the bunker to have the hole, tie the hole, and win 3-2, just like you did in your match against Brent. But, talk about for a minute the role of a referee in match play, because I don't think a lot of people don't understand what the role and responsibilities are of a referee in match play.
Yeah. So actually, you mentioned, we talked about our regular match play here. But flipping to the next week, we had our senior match play out at Highland Meadows. Another long 5-day week that culminated in a champion, only an 18-hole final there. But for the 18-hole final, I was the referee for that particular match. And my role essentially that day, is to only get involved with rulings when I'm invited in for a ruling. In match play, the beauty of match play is that players have the ability to figure things out themselves. They can come to a reasonable agreement of how they would like to proceed with a ruling. They can't waive a rule, or they can't agree to waive a penalty, but if they are both in agreement that that's the correct way it should be handled, that's going to be treated as the correct procedure in match play. So for a match referee, the only time that a match referee really gets involved with the match is at one, if he is really seeing a blatant, obvious breach of a rule that should be called out, or that when he is invited into that match to handle or answer questions of fact or handle a dispute between players.
So on that exact point, so let's say going back to the men's match play with Connor and Dylan, if you're the referee and you happen to be present at the time and you see the order, is that something you would speak up about, or is that something you're just going to let it play out?
It's a good question. I think you could probably ask two different referees and you might get two different answers in that scenario. Mm-hmm. Me personally, I may mention to his opponent that the option to recall is there should he choose it.
I'm saying, would you stop the player and say, Connor, not your turn. Just a friendly reminder. Dylan has the honor here.
If I was ahead of it, yes. I would politely remind the player that the honor on the tee has changed.
Right.
In that scenario, that would be something that a referee probably should be aware of and should get ahead
I agree.
To avoid the question.
And there's definitely a bedside manner, and you're right. It's not spelled out, to the letter of every single situation. And I think in honoring the spirit of match play, I think the referee should remember that.
Perfect example, actually, and going back to that same thing, is in our senior match play. This was a semifinal match, not the final match, but I was refereeing one of those matches again, and quickly reminded a player. I said, "Hey, listen, I know you're about ready to go there, but it looks like your opponent is away in this scenario.
Yeah,
we may just want to just check things real quick." So,
yeah, I've had some interesting. I've seen a stroke recalled in a four ball match where a player teed off in front of the markers, where it was kind of one of those situations where, as the referee, I was not in a position to really see for sure, and it was kind of a silly scenario because it was a layup on a par four. It was like, I think he's going to hit the fairway again, and that's the other thing. You don't have to recall it. So if Connor had hit the ball and buried it in the lip of the bunker, I'm not sure Dylan would have recalled it, but he hit it to 2 feet. So again, that option is a unique idiosyncrasy of match play.
Yeah, like I said, I think I mentioned it previous when we opened the episode here, but it definitely might play into the strategy of how a player approaches, that part of the match. Again, if Connor would have blasted that ball over the green or into that bunker for his first shot, Dylan might have let that one slide and proceeded to play a whole different way.
Well, I almost said without getting into the weeds, but the point of this podcast is to get into the weeds. So Here, another example of the application of penalties that just sprung to mind. It's unique in match play is the adjustment of the match. And the one that's most common is too many clubs. You have 15 clubs in your bag. You discover it on the third hole. So if you and I are playing a match and I've got 15 clubs and I discover it while we're playing the third hole, I still have something to play for on the third hole. It's not a loss of hole penalty. It's a match adjustment penalty. So if I'd lost the first two holes, discovered 15 clubs, and then proceed to lose the third hole, I'm three down. Now we adjust to the maximum of two holes. I'm five down after three. Not a good way to start. Whereas, so sometimes I think people assume that that's a loss of hole penalty. And it isn't. It's an adjustment. Let's say we're on the third hole and I'm two down and I play a wrong ball on the third hole. Well, that hole's over. There's no reason to keep grinding. But if I were to find that 15th club and I win the third hole, well, that's going to help me. So I still have something to play for in that situation.
Always, when I was in junior golf, it always seemed like a silly reminder about 14 clubs in the bag. But, there's a reason why we have that penalty and there's a match adjustment penalty for more than 14 clubs. And it does happen from time to time.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And especially I see it. I should see it because I don't really work these events, but I know it happens quite frequently at the college level where kids are, clubs are going in and out of the bag frequently. They're, changing clubs or they're testing something out that maybe they leave the other club in. It just happens. You know, bags get thrown in travel buses and clubs get switched elsewhere. And
I wonder how many times a player, if you had some way to quantify this, how many times players actually discover a 15th club and don't say anything or don't do the right. Cause I mean, that's totally the honor system. Who's going to go in there and call you on that? I mean, seriously, you're on 16, you're 4 under for the day. You're about to win this tournament and you're like, holy cow, I got an extra club. Talk about testing your integrity.
Spirit of the game there.
I'd like to say I would do it. I'd like to say, now, I think I would because the stakes for me are really, really, really low. But I'll tell you, that's the great thing about the game. You're your own referee. It's on you.
Absolutely.
One of my favorite quotes, if not my favorite quote about golf, Dave Hill said, it's the hardest game to play and the easiest to cheat at. And I think as silly and funny as that sounds, it's so true because it's going to test you in every way. It's going to test your hand-eye coordination, all your physical abilities, but it's also going to test your patience, your mental, stamina and your integrity all at the same time. Great game. What you think?
Absolutely. Flipping back, we'll do a little quick side turn here. Flipping back to our, order of play argument here. I had an email from, I want to say a listener, but I know it wasn't from a listener. It's just from a, one of our CGA members. She was asking a question about her ladies league, who often plays match play. And she was asking, about the provision in the order of play that allows players to play at a turn in match play in the order of saving time. And there is an exception within that rule that allows players to play out of turn if they are doing it in the sole purpose of saving time. She asked if that's, you could do that for the entire match, right? We want to make an agreement that, hey, we're just going to play ready golf no matter what today, even though it's still match play. She was asking if this was a thing you could do or this was a.
Well, I already know your answer. You're a letter of the law guy. Absolutely not.
As being a letter of the law guy, I said, well, it sounds like if they're making this agreement, that sounds like a big problem. Under the rules, by making this agreement, they're essentially agreeing to waive that entire rule about the order of play and match play. You can't do that. You can't agree to waive an entire rule just because you want to play in 3 hours and 50 minutes and go enjoy a nice breakfast at home afterwards.
Yeah, right. Well, I think I probably, even though I'm a spirit of the gamer and I'm definitely a spirit of the pace of player, I would have to agree with you that really does fundamentally change, the spirit and ethos of match play. So we talked about loss of hole penalties. We talked about order of play or loss of hole versus two strokes. There is however, some things that apply to both forms of play, and that's one stroke penalties. Mm-hmm. For the most part, there are some differences, I suppose, but there for the general, in general, if you're getting a one stroke penalty, you're getting it in both forms of play. Would you agree with that before we
generally?
Yeah. And so let's talk about one that is not the case. Although you could say they're really apples to oranges because the status of the individuals involved in this scenario are not the same. So you and I are playing a match, and this happened at the NCAA women's final, and we both have trolleys and the rough is thick, and I happen to be a faster walker than you, and which is definitely true. I walk faster than most people, I'd imagine. Probably walk faster.
I'd say we walk pretty similar.
Okay.
Pace.
So at any rate, in this particular hole, I'm ahead of you. And we both hit it to the left. There's a ball in the left rough and there's a ball in the fairway. And I'm just cruising along in the left rough because I'm pretty sure I hit it in the left rough. But it turns out, ba-bump, I hit something. I just rolled over something. I look back and lo and behold, it's Lewis's Titleist 2 with a blue dot. Okay. Didn't see it. No idea. I was in that general area. I couldn't see it. This is deep tournament condition rough. And I'm like, okay, no big deal. I moved my opponent's ball. I'm not penalized for searching for my own ball anymore. So no harm, no foul, right? Just put it back. No problem. Let me finish my story because I'm making my case as I'm telling the story. So poor Ed, who is just being, you know, did nothing wrong whatsoever, was simply walking, rolled over a golf ball. And by the way, well, I'm getting ahead of myself. So I now go and ask, seek a ruling, and I'm informed that's a one-stroke penalty. Now, thankfully, it's not a loss of hole penalty. So now let's come back to stroke play. If this is stroke play, obviously the status is completely different. Now I'm your – we don't use the word fellow competitor anymore, do we? Is that gone? Is that out of the definition?
I still technically use it sometimes, but I don't believe it's in the definition.
Anyway, anymore. So we'll call him a fellow competitor. So now I'm your fellow competitor, and that happens, no problem. So my point is, we got rid of a lot of salt in the wound penalties, as I call them. One-stroke penalties, like the ball hits me, or I hit my equipment, or you know, a number of others. I hit the ball more than once. We got rid of those. And now we still have this, in my opinion, carryover one-stroker that I think is absurd that I get a penalty in this situation. We got to change it.
So I think, now we come to the point where we disagree here. We've hit our fork in the road to where you go down, the path of you think it should be changed. Unfortunately, I'm going to go down the path of, I believe that this rule, I'm on the other side of the fence here with this rule. I think it's applied correctly. And I think it's, my reasoning for it is, again, we'll start back here where in match play versus stroke play, Ed running over my ball in stroke play, he's an outside influence in stroke play. I mean, we're not going to penalize an outside influence for doing this to moving a ball at rest. It's going to be treated as any other outside influence moving that ball, whether it's a spectator, a dog, you know, old man walking down the street. They're all defined as the same thing. They're all outside influences. In match play, he's my opponent. And my opponent in match play, at least from what I think and then other letter of the law people think as well, is that my opponent in match play should have to take the same level of care and attentiveness to my ball, their opponent's ball, as they do their own. And if you move your own ball, if you're not searching for it, and you don't accidentally move it on the putting green or in the teeing area, that's going to be a one-stroke penalty. And I believe that should also carry over to your opponent's ball. In this case, you weren't searching for it. It wasn't in the act of searching. This wasn't, you know, an accidental movement. You know, you didn't accidentally lift my ball on the putting green thinking it was yours, because that penalty's also been eliminated, I believe. I just think that in the general area, when a ball is in play, an opponent should have to take the same amount of care and attentiveness to their opponent's ball as their own. That's kind of where I land on this side of the argument.
And the reason I'm being quiet is because you make a very, very good argument. And I fully respect that. And the part of me that believes strongly in individual responsibility. And that's what I love about the game of golf is you are held accountable. And I think what a wonderful, frankly, contrast between a lot of our lives, not to get on a soapbox about, you know, yesteryear. So I get that. And I guess in as I try to deconstruct my argument and say, if I'm walking in the rough and I roll over my own ball, not in search, I'm penalized. And it's a bad break for sure. Just because it's a bad break doesn't mean the rules should be changed. So I think this is a first. You've talked me. I lose the hole here to you. I just lost the argument. I'm serious. I think when I heard about it, and maybe it was my own, I'll be honest. I heard about this while doing a radio show. Jerry Walters and Mike, his partner, had me on every Saturday and they were, or Sunday, and we were talking about this ruling. And I was convinced that this was one of the salt in the wound penalties, as I call them, that had been eliminated. And when Jerry told me, nope, it's a one stroker. And I said, no way. And I texted you and actually texted Jerry to correct my, cause I gave a bad ruling over the air saying, no, that penalty doesn't. And I did in my defense say it with some caution that I may not be correct. So I agree. I think this makes sense. I just thought of one of my other arguments. In match play, it used to be if I inadvertently mark and lift my opponent's ball on the putting green, there was a penalty. That penalty's gone. So my biggest argument was if we got rid of that penalty, care, pay attention, why are we keeping the other one? And is there a disconnect there? Because if I mark and lift your ball on the putting green, now there's no penalty. Prior to 2019, there was. So we got rid of that one stroker. Why didn't we get rid of this?
I think in that scenario there, where it's an inadvertent, you know, mark lift, so the putting green realized accidentally, hey, this is not my ball. You didn't do it deliberately to move your opponent's ball. You were doing it thinking it was your own. And it was an accident that just happened to be your opponent's ball. That, and along with any other accidental movement on the putting green, has also been eliminated when we modernized the rules in 2019. This scenario we're talking about now with the movement of the ball in the general area, or it could be in any other area of the golf course, could be in a bunker, could be in a penalty area. Mm-hmm. We still, even if it's accidental, we still penalize some, a lot of that movement in those areas of the golf course. The putting green, we've made that friendly. We've mm-hmm. made that to where it is almost virtually impossible to get a penalty on the putting green mm-hmm. Unless it's a very deliberate act and you're doing something you shouldn't be doing. The putting green has been changed across all forms of play, match play and stroke play. But in the general area and bunkers, the penalty or in penalty areas, those things still, I like to call this in my head, and it still applies in the putting green because there's still a ball in play in the putting green. But in those areas of the golf course, those are kind of the live areas. Mm-hmm. When you hit a ball from the teeing area and it lands somewhere in the general area, a bunker or a penalty area, sometimes in par threes, we might put it on the putting green. But after that ball's been played from the teeing area, it's in one of those live areas mm-hmm. to where that ball's in play. You know, there's certain restrictions and allowances we can do with that ball. But mostly the only movement we can get away with in those areas is from a club head. So I think that's maybe the disconnect that you're maybe talking about with the putting green in the general area. We've absolved a lot of accidental movement on the putting green, but in that general area and those other areas of the golf course, it's still kind of remaining the same.
I like that. It's just like going live on this podcast. We're live. And those kinds of metaphors, analogies, I think are very helpful. Again, not to, because I admit defeat. I agree. So if I had a vote for the next version, 2023, I guess, of the new rules, and we have this on the docket, and I would imagine it might be, and there are some things, by the way, and maybe for next time to tease our next episode, I would like to talk about rules we would like to see changed. And there are a couple, I think that I know of a couple I have, and I'd be curious what they may be for you. But
we'll give one sneak peek if anyone's going to listen to the next episode. ball from a relief in a divot will not be on.
No, exactly. That's correct. Absolutely not. Then it's no longer golf. It's something else. So I can just hear people out there who may have been compelled by my argument, few as they may be, saying, well, wait a minute. You use the word accidental in both cases. I didn't purposely move your ball when I was strolling down the rough and had my wheel of my trolley hit it. It was an accident. And I didn't intentionally pick up your ball on the putting green. It was an accident. So I think they both meet the definition of the Webster's definition of accident, not done on purpose. So, but I think that your finer point of the game board of golf, which I love that the game board of golf and where your ball lies matters. Mm-hmm. And I think looking at it through the lens of the putting green and making sure that there is complete consistency on the putting green is a good counter argument to that. Cause if you could still be penalized for marking and lifting a ball on the putting green, you know, cause that would be the other way to go would be to say, we're going to keep that penalty. And maybe that would have been a better solution because we've created this distinction between accidental movements of opponents' balls and they don't have the same outcome. So what would it have the converse of this is you and I are the rules committee. Do we want to go back and penalize Ed Mate for not taking care, not paying attention and lifting your, which I think is more egregious than not seeing a ball in the rough. So what would that create in terms of problems? Should we have not eliminated that penalty?
I know. I think that penalty should have still been eliminated because I think I like where you said we needed to create consistency across the entire putting green. When we eliminated XL movement on the putting green, like I said, it becomes very hard for us to get penalized once our ball is on that surface or once, you know, mm-hmm. once we come to that surface in the progression of playing a hole. I think kind of going to the other end of the spectrum, if we just got rid of all accidental movement and penalties across all accidental movement, well, then it becomes a free-for-all.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of finding that fine, that where do you draw that line? And I think the perfect place to draw that line is just, you know, once your ball reaches that fifth area of the golf course, the putting green, there's where the line is drawn. And, mm-hmm. you know, accidental movement, if the putting green was to my right, well, then accidental movement from here on is kind of absolved. Everything to this side of the golf course, which is the general area and all the other areas of the golf course, well, yeah. we're still going to have to be responsible for accidental movement.
Yeah, when I was on the rules committee, I always like to work that in, by the way. It's just kind of, you know.
Yeah, you may have mentioned that.
A little chest pumping. When I was on the rules committee, no, it didn't really dawn on me because we were so into the weeds. Not into the weeds. We were so deep into making huge changes. And I was like, wait a minute. And I had to actually double check one of the drafts to make sure that you were still penalized for causing your ball to move in the general area. Cause I thought, oh my gosh, have we gone so far now where we're going to eliminate that penalty? Cause remember, we got rid of all these salt in the wound penalties. One stroke gone, one stroke gone, one stroke gone. And then I thought, wait a minute. Cause I was convinced that we had even made the decision, at least in drafting, to say, and think about that. If we got rid of that and you no longer had to be careful around your ball, oh my goodness, what a change, what a fundamental change that would be. Because now, I mean, obviously honest golfers are going to continue to be honest, but even an honest golfer, you know, I had a situation just in my most recent round where I was, I was on the 11th hole. And I was in the rough and I took the ball back and the ball moved, I think, while after I did, you know, after it doesn't matter if I dressed it or not. But the ball moved and it was before I hit it. And I didn't take enough care because the lie was poofy enough that, you know, I should be penalized in that situation. So take care. I'm really glad we didn't change.
Yeah. And I thinking ahead, and maybe this is a good place to kind of start wrapping up here, but thinking ahead with eliminating that accidental movement everywhere, it doesn't exactly correlate or it doesn't exactly draw the line directly to it, but it pretty much eliminates one of our core principles of the rules of golf, which is play the ball as it lies. Because now if we eliminate that accidental movement and people start, you know, or taking no care with their ball and moving it and accidentally kicking it or putting their bag down and the leg kicks out and moves their ball, Well, now they're essentially just playing preferred lies by moving their ball back, I say in air quotes, to that previous lie. But they have the ball in hand pretty much free of charge. Right. So I think it's that one, making a small change here with accidental movements, I think further down the line has greater consequences.
Well, the beauty of this podcast is whether you're a spirit of the gamer or a letter of the law, you agree, play the balls at lies in the courses you find. So I think you're right. Let's wrap it here. And next time, maybe we'll talk about things we can agree on.
Hopefully. Like I said, you lost this hole, but just like in match play, there's always the next one.